Good morning, everybody. Aaron and I just had a good moment in the back. We got a good chuckle. I think Kevin knew what he was doing, planned his vacations accordingly, because we are going through the Sermon on the Mount, and he left me with lust. So, ha-ha, very funny. Next week, it doesn't get any better, but I guess since it was my idea to do the Sermon on the Mount, I might deserve it a little bit. So we're going to work through this in the best. I know this is a mixed audience with some younger folks. We're going to work through this the best way possible. Try to keep it PG, but get the point across. Because as we've been reading, this is almost the Christ's greatest hits, right? Are compiled in the Sermon on the Mount. He's saying some things that are outlandish to the times, and this is one of them. This is a passage that I don't think we often get the entirety. We just take it as it is and move on because it's something that's uncomfortable. And I'm not going to lie, it's a little bit uncomfortable. So standing up here today, when he said, "You get next week," I was like, okay, that's fine. I've been enjoying standing up here every once in a while, and then I thought about it, and I'm like, well, you got me. That's funny, Dad. Look forward to getting you back sometime. So I'm going to start. We've been going through the Sermon on the Mount. Last week was on anger, and I'm going to flip back for just a minute because I think it's important to keep everything in context. And by that, I mean we have these six case studies of laws that God's people were given. And what Christ says through these, and I hope y'all hear this, what Christ is doing is he's taking the law and he's giving us a little bit of insight into the wisdom that God has in that law. Because who likes to be told to do something because he told you to? I did not, right? I wanted to know everything about why did you tell me to do that? It makes no sense. I try to do that with Brooks. He's smart and already knows how to argue, which is kind of crazy for a two-year-old. So we're playing the mind games already. I told you so doesn't work for him either. Sometimes we make it work. But it's not something that is easy for us to take sometimes. And when we have these commands, and this is pre-Christ, obviously, we have these commands, and then years and years and years and years later, we have the Messiah who comes down, and he's using this opportunity. Again, let's remember what's going on. There's crowds following him. His name's starting to get out there. Everybody's starting to hear rumblings of the Messiah. So he's getting these big crowds out. Make sure that that's off so we don't get any crazy noises here. And he draws away and his disciples follow him. So the disciples are following him. So if you can just imagine, there's these big crowds and he kind of draws away. But the crowds are still going to follow. But right now he's in this intimate time with his disciples. And he's going over these things. And what I hope we gather out of that is he's talking about some things deeper than a surface level. Right? He's talking about some things that he's talking to disciples who have been following him, who have heard these teachings, who understand the law, who understand the teachings. And he wants to go a little bit deeper with it. So even though it is spoken in a large crowd, it's an intimate setting with people who already have a general concept of these teachings. So I'm going to start in verse 17 here. Christ came to fulfill the law. "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And then he goes into the six case studies. We had anger last week. This week's going to be about lust. But I want us to keep in mind the preface to that is that God did not come, the Messiah did not come. And we get this mixed up. It says it plain as day, but for some reason we get it mixed up. He did not come to abolish the law. We get caught up in these grace and this mercy, and we get so caught up in that that we think, hey, I can do whatever I want, just keep on living my life, and God's grace and God's mercy is going to cover me in that. When we are called to something bigger, and we went through that calling earlier, we're called to something greater. It says, shall we go on sinning so that grace may abound? By no means, right? When we accept Christ into our life, should we look the same? Not at all. We should be changed, transformed, moving on in a different way, and Christ is trying to show us that different way. Christ is calling us to things that are hard for even us today to wrap our heads around. We went through anger, and it starts off, and it's going to do something similar here. We went to anger, and it starts off, and it says, do not murder, right? And everybody's like, okay, yeah, I got that, right? And only six of you raised their hands. So, visitors beware, right? But it says, do not murder, and we all kind of feel pretty good about ourselves. And then the consequences start to grow as Jesus starts to backtrack. And he goes all the way to pretty much, don't call somebody a moron, or you'll be thrown into the pits of hell. And then I'm thinking, wow, I've called a lot of people. Dad's called me a moron. He said that last week, and he's not here, so I'm going to call him one. Just kidding. But it backs us up to just the words we say, and what he's getting at is, hey, guys, this is a heart issue. What you put into your mind, what you put into your heart, it says, will overflow from you. Right? And so when we get in this position, and it's understanding that when you're speaking ill of somebody else, there's something wrong in here. This morning in class, we got to go over David, and I've said it again and again that David blows my mind over and over, because I put myself in his shoes, and I'm like, man, I'd have taken Saul out early, right? And then when Saul passes away, he gives this great lament to a man who's tried to kill him several times. He pretty much praises him, puts him on this altar and says, hey, this was the guy. This was y'all's kings. Guys, mourn for that. And he gives this great testimony of things that we often don't see Saul as. But when David gets this opportunity to speak ill of somebody, what does he do? He bolsters him up. This is a guy after God's own heart. You kind of see where God's heart's playing into this? When we have the opportunity, though it may be justified in our heads, to speak ill of somebody, to do something wrong of somebody, that's a heart issue. That means, hey, we're not putting the right stuff in. That's our checks and balances. We all like checks and balances, right? Our check is, hey, if I start downing on somebody, dogging on somebody when they're not there, or even to their face, who's the issue probably with? Me, because you know what happens when my wife bolsters me up? It helps, right? When she stomps on me, doesn't feel so good. When she bolsters me up, might change how I'm acting a little bit, right? And now we're going to get into lust, the not-so-fun part, the awkward part. We're going to go ahead and read it. Again, this is the second case study of a higher calling. Why? To understand some of the wisdom put behind a law, because he's saying, hey, this isn't just a law. There's a reason not to do this. There's a reason not to murder. There's a reason not to lust. There's a reason not to commit adultery. There's reasons for all of this. And so he breaks it down. And again, we're going to go right back to the heart. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. We talked a little bit about this morning. Christ is using these hyperbolic statements, these charged up statements. Who wants to cut off their right hand? Is there any left-handed people in here? I don't want to leave you guys out, so if y'all want to change it to lefties, you can. Nana, if you want to change it to lefty. Right? He's saying this. Everybody, because again, when something's said that kind of stands out and that makes you think, why would he say that? Well, it's because most people are right-handed, right? I don't know how many people there are, but there's two. So let's say 96% of us are right-handed. He's trying to get this point across clearly that, hey, your right eye, your right hand, it's better to lose these parts than to go into hell. Can we all agree with that? Probably, hopefully, right? I'd rather be crippled than to go to hell. Let's be honest. But let's get to the root of that. Let's get to why he's saying that. He's right? I don't want to take it all the way to the point where everybody walks in and is missing limbs next week, right? Let's not go there. But he's trying to get across the point that, hey, this is the extent of things you should be doing to keep yourself out of these positions. Now we're going to break down some of the language. I'm a nerd. I'm sorry. I like some of the Greek. I really like the Greek, the Aramaic. When it says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, ladies are probably saying, hey, this is to the fellas, right? It's him, it's her, it's explicit. And there's some truth to that. And I want to break that down real fast. We'll go into the ladies here in a minute. But fellas, this is explicitly in this text is talking to us. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. When it says everyone who looks at a woman, we get this idea, right? This glance, this is something deeper. In the Greek, this is a longful stare, right? Ladies, probably don't like when fellas stare at you that much, right? It might be a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit awkward. This is the road we're going down here. This is guys imagining something in their head that's not to be imagined, because the relationship that God has established from the very beginning between man and wife should be bolstered up. Their relationship in that. His body belongs to her. Her body belongs to him. And this is, I guess we're going to get into ladies a little bit sooner. This is said to men because back in these days, ladies already had that understanding, right? So this is a passage that is rocking the cultural norm. This is a passage that is unfamiliar to these people. What did David do? His big fault, Bathsheba, right? What happened to David? He lost that son. God condemned that, right? But did he get drug out and stoned? No. What was Solomon's shortcomings? What did Abraham do? Offered up his wife. Like, we can go on and on and on about these shortcomings that we see stem from this root. Now, who got dragged in front of Christ? The woman. What did she do? Committed adultery. They said, right? And I don't think it was just said. I think it was, right? I think it was proven. And Christ says, hey, he who has no sin cast the first stone. But her sin was there, and the Pharisees are saying, hey, this is the law. Right? So this, in the cultural realm of things, let's keep that in mind. The cultural realm of things is, hey, wives, your bodies belong to the husbands. Husbands, it's wrong, but, right? But we get it. Right? That's the cultural. Outside of Christianity, it's not monogamy. Right? This is over and over and over. In the cultural setting, men have multiple wives, and that's not looked upon poorly. Women with multiple men, you're looked on like you stand on the side of the on the corner, right? And so what Christ is doing in this moment is tearing down this huge cultural drift right here. And he's saying, hey, fellas, this goes both ways. And not only to the extent that I don't want you to commit adultery on your wife, not only to the extent that I don't want you taking another wife, but to the extent that if in your heart you take another wife, in your heart you take another lover, it's pretty hot down there, right? He's taking this big cultural divide, this big thing, and is saying, hey, ladies already know, right? But men have been getting away with this for a long time. And he's saying it's not right. How I intended, how I created man a helper. Do you look at that helper like, it's just as important. Like, life cannot move on without that helper. Why? Because when God created her, he said, it's not good for man to be alone. It was intentional. He put that relationship together in creation in the garden. And what we do post that is to distort it. And again, down to the heart issue, what does he say? Because God knows if there's a heart issue, what's going to happen eventually? If there's an opportunity, you're probably going to take it. Right? If you're putting the bad stuff in, what's going to happen? Bad stuff going to come out. What he's saying is fix it. In modern day Church of Christ, right? And let me preface this. I am full... I think modesty's great, but let's get into this a little bit deeper. Can y'all control what happens in the world? Can y'all control the billboard that is in the city that you're driving in? Can y'all control the ad that pops up on the television screen? Can y'all control all these things? The answer would be no. So, what oftentimes we do is we say, hey, don't put your... Sorry, there's just a little escape artist over here. Oftentimes what we do is we say, hey, ladies, dress better. It's y'all's fault. Right? Hey, ladies, do this. It's y'all's fault. And God's saying, hey, fellas, fix your heart. God's saying, you can't walk out into the world, you can't have a female coworker, you can't have any of this stuff unless you fix your heart, because when opportunity arises, if your whole plan's avoid, 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 you can't run that long. Why? Who believes in Satan? Hopefully all of us, right? Satan's a dark tempter. Though his power is not as great as Christ, you think he can put something in front of you, whether it be on your phone, whether it be in person, whatever the case may be, you think he got the stroke to do that? Probably. And so what God is saying, what Christ is saying is, we're putting ourselves in avoidance mode. And it's great. You should not put yourselves in those positions. I'm not saying test yourselves or see what happens. What he's saying is put the good in your heart, because you know what happens when you put the good in your heart? It overflows from you. You know what happens when you put God in your heart instead of anger? It overflows from you. You know what happens when you put God in your heart instead of lust? It overflows from you. Now, what's our favorite thing to say nowadays is, oh, well, Jesus didn't have to deal with that. Christ didn't have a cell phone. Christ didn't have this. Christ didn't have that. And then the counter argument is, well, Christ had to deal with the root of that, which is true. I don't want to take anything away from that argument. Christ didn't have to deal with it, but he definitely dealt with the root of it. Because if you don't think that things were crooked back then, read a little bit of Greek history, right? There's a lot of wacky stuff going on that we would probably look down on today. So yes, he had to deal with the root of it, but guess why I've just wiped all of that, all those arguments out of my mind? Because what's Christ put in his heart? What's in God's heart? Good. God. So what overflows from him? We're not letting even a niggle of lust, even anything of this, because what is he doing? He's filling himself with God. That's who he is. And who he is, which is God, radiates to everybody else. So what's the fix? It's not to say, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. Hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. We see that over and over and over. And who's failed saying that? And whatever. Hey, I'm going to stop doing this. Hey, I'm going to stop doing that. Hey, when you try to take something out, guess what there's room for? Something. It's the human nature that we can't leave emptiness. It's funny. I don't know if my wife remembers this, but when you're in the dating stage and you're asking dumb questions and you get bored and you're long distance, so you just have hours over the phone, you ask dumb questions. And one of the dumb questions I asked her was about what would her superpower be. And she said, do you remember? To fill things up. And I was like, that's dumb, right? Super strength, flying. Then I got to thinking about it, and it's fill things up. She's like, I said, well, what are you going to fill up? It's like, yeah, you need a glass of water? She probably didn't say water. She probably said Dr. Pepper. You need a glass of Dr. Pepper? You fill it up. Bank account's low? You fill it up. And I'm like, well, this is a superpower, right? I'm like, okay, you thought about this one way more than I did, because I'm like, man, I'd love to be jacked. Just lift the car over my head or something. Mr. Incredible. But that's human. That's the human mindset. You got to fill stuff up. So if you take something that you're doing wrong and you take it out of your life, you have to put something in it. And that's what God's saying when he's saying your overflow of your heart's your actions. And so if you're going to spend it watching shows that you probably shouldn't watch and that are going to be a temptation to you, guess what? That's going to overflow from your heart. If you fill it with anger, with violence, with I want to do something bad, guess what's going to flow up from your heart? Anger, violence. And we can keep going down these, and we will, and next week's going to be a little bit different, but we continue down the same type of path, is the overflow of your heart is what he's talking about. And everything that we're putting in that's pushing Christ out. Because guess what? And this is the craziest thing. If you put lust in your heart and you make that what you focus on, guess how hard it is to live life? Right? Because that becomes everything that you're thinking about. And here's Christ's superpower. If you put Christ in your heart and let Him reside on the throne of your heart, guess how easy it is to live life? Maybe not easy. Maybe you'll be persecuted. Maybe you'll get talked down upon. Maybe you'll be used as a doormat from time to time. But guess what happens? It's the one thing that you can put in your heart, in your life. Your heart overflows with it. And you can live life and work okay and do all the things that you would normally do on a daily basis. And guess what? You're going to do it right. There's nothing else you can put in your heart that you're going to be able to do that with. Nothing. I'm convinced and convicted of that. Why? Because God kind of tells us so. Right? We all have our vices, and if you let that rule your heart, that's what's going to stem from it. If you let God rule your heart, guess what? I can go to work and treat people properly. I can go to work and do business properly. I can come home and be the husband that I'm supposed to be. I can come home and be the father that I'm supposed to be. The son-in-law sometimes, that gets shady. But I can be who I'm called to be. Guess what happens when you put something else on your throne of your heart and let it reside over you? You may be, and this is what we love to do, you may be good at a couple things. And you'd be like, well, I did that really good. And then the rest of your life goes to shambles. And sadly, some people are okay with that because they do these three things really well. This calling is so much higher, and whether it's anger, lust, or we're going to go down the list, right? We're going to go through the list, but whatever the case may be, there's one thing that you can put in your heart, and hopefully it's overflowing with it, and then life becomes what life should look like. And that's Christ. See, the downfall of lust is a heart issue, but that is taken from something good. The relationship that it distorts was something between man and wife that was established at the beginning of creation. And God said it was good. Guess what lust is doing? It's the opposite. It's taking a relationship that is meant to be good, that is meant to be godly, and it's taking that in your heart and pushing away with all the rest of the stuff, and it's not being right to one person, it's doing it multiple people, it's created this big separation. And it all comes back to your heart. It's not easy to change your heart, right? It's habitual. It's practice. So if you're not reading daily, if you're not ingraining yourself just as much as you would anything else, just as much as that TV show that you probably shouldn't be watching, just as much as that, whatever the case, how many, okay, we're guilty of it. How many of y'all at least, well, now it's kid shows, bummer, but how many of y'all at least watch one show a night? Right? It's Spirit with Brooks. See? Spirit? We gonna watch Spirit, Dad? Spirit, yeah. It's Spirit right now with Brooks. And we watch that in, I don't know, what's an episode? 30 minutes? 24 minutes, Jaden says. Unless it's a season finale. Right? So we put this and we take our time and we ingrain ourselves in Spirit or whatever else that we're going to ingrain ourselves in. And all God's saying is, hey, what you should be putting in, I'm not anti don't ever watch anything, just read your Bible, throw your TVs away. I'm not saying that, right? But what I'm saying is I'm trying to get us to realize the difference of spending time in the Word with your family, with your loved ones, talking about God with people around you, or filling it up with other stuff. Because if you're filling it up with other stuff, you're also putting that stuff in your heart. There's good stuff to put in your heart, right? Most of the time, all the time, the good comes from God, though. Family, your wife, your husband, your kids, right? There's stuff that stems from that that I wholeheartedly support that stuff going in, right? That's energizing, exciting. But again, you got to put God in there. Because if you're putting anything else in there other than what's godly, relationships from God, whatever you can fill in that blank, if you're putting anything in other than that, it's going to come out eventually, right? Whether it be through words, whether it be through the worst act that's listed, adultery, whether it be through the smallest act that's listed in calling somebody a moron, whatever the case may be, it's going to come out. Why? Why can I stand here and say that with all confidence? I mean, I've been there. I've had some things come out that I wish I could put back in. Doesn't work like that. Why'd those things come out? Because I was filling myself up with the wrong stuff. Thank y'all for being here. Next week, again, doesn't get any easier than Kevin's back. Varsity can come back in with the layups. Just kidding. They're not layups. It's still tough stuff to chew on. But guys, as you go along your week, I hope if there's one encouragement in this, is that whatever you're putting in is bound to come out. You may think that you're the best in the world at hiding it. It's only a matter of time. Because it'll build, right? It builds. If you keep putting it in, guess what's filling up? You. Because there's a cap on that. So if you keep injecting it in, it's going to come out. And you probably are going to wish that it never had. So what's the fix? Don't put it in. Not only don't put it in, but fill that space with God. Fill that space with a relationship that's always going to be there for you. A relationship that's promised, guaranteed, stamped with a mark of approval. We all have that opportunity, and I hope we take it. Thank y'all for being here. If there's anything we can do for you, I'd ask for you to come up, grab somebody as we stand and sing our invitation.